Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Centered Loving. I'm your host, Jim Brown, and as always, I open up with telling you you're safe. No harm will come to you in this space. And my goal every week is to bring more love, more joy, more happiness, more compassion, more peace, and more abundance into your life. And I ask you to listen to the show with the idea of taking one thing out of the show and implementing it into your daily life. The opening quote is by Reverend Michael Beckwith, who's a pastor at Agape Church here in the Los Angeles area, which is a church of religious science. And it's, "I believe that you're great, that there's something magnificent about you. Regardless of what has happened to you in your life, regardless of how young or how old you think you might be, the moment you begin to think properly, there's something that is within you. There's power within you. That's greater than the world. It will begin to emerge. It will take over your life. It will feed you. It will clothe you. It will guide you. It will protect you. It will direct you and sustain your very existence if you let it." Now that's what I know for sure. And again, that's from Michael Beckwith. And while I was waiting for us to go on the air, something came on my screensaver, and it's a picture of a horse that was saying, You can lead a human to knowledge, but you can't lead him to think. I thought that was cute, because we say you can lead a horse to water, but can't make him drink. Anyway, the opening, hopefully funny story, is about a guy and a girl meeting in a bar. They got along so well, they decided to go to the girl's place. A few drinks later, the guy takes off his shirt, and then he washes his hands. He then takes off his trousers, and again he washes his hands. Girl's been watching him and says, "You must be a dentist." The guy's surprised, said, "Yeah, how did you figure that out?" "Easy," she says. "You keep washing your hands." One thing leads to another, and they make love. After it's all over, the girl says, "You must be a really good dentist." The guy, now with an inflated ego, said, "Sure, I'm a good dentist. But how did you figure that out?" The girl replies, "I didn't feel a thing." So always be, you know, I should have a laugh track for this, so at least I can hear that somebody's laughing, even if it's me. Anyway, what I wanted to do today, in not necessarily a certain chronological order, was give you an idea of my background and what I've learned in my life. And we'll start by, so if you got the email that announces this show every week, we're going to do it in three things. One is I'll talk about my upbringing. Two, the one question that changed my whole life. And three, what I've learned in the journey that I've been on for a little over 70 years now. And that journey started on Easter Sunday, 1945. And Mom and Dad, I was the first, and we lived in a basement apartment for 15 years, and Mom and Dad lived, they slept on a rollaway bed in the living room. And we had bread and butter for lunch, bread and gravy for dinner. If I got a hole in my shoe, I put a baseball card in it, and never did figure out if I was quote-unquote poor. But like everybody, you know, not like everybody else, but I was brought up as a Catholic, and Mom was a really strict Catholic. And matter of fact, she was, you know, she went to Mass and Communion 7 days a week until she was 85, and she couldn't go anymore. But what happened is, you know, with each one of you, our whole universe, as we're babies, are our parents. And I'm going to use a typical family, which would be a mom and a dad. And I know there's exceptions to that, but I can't cover everything at one time. So they're your whole universe. And then maybe grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles. And what they say to us as infants is what we call the truth. Because they're all we know. And what are they doing? They're brainwashing us from a place of limitation, from a place of lack, and from a place of fear. And I got that. And now, as I got a little older and went to school, I went to a Catholic school in Chicago with the nuns, and the nuns, you know, were part of that game. And the nuns just kept drilling into me, you know, about Catholicism, about heaven, about hell, and hell was always part of the game, even to the point that I never understood it, that if I went to a Lutheran church that was, quote-unquote, a mortal sin, died, I'd go to hell. And we kept getting this hell, hell, hell beat into us. And I got scared. You know, I was afraid of everything because I didn't want to go to hell. Hell was this terrible place. As an aside here, the word hell comes from ancient Jerusalem, and it was at the outskirts of the town. And what parents would do when their kids would misbehave, the outskirts of town, which was called hell, is where they would go and burn their garbage. So if the kids would misbehave, they'd be threatened to be taken to hell. So I learned about this, and everything was based on fear. And every time I'd ask a question to the nun about something, and she'd say, well, we have to take this as an article of faith. As an article of faith. As an article of faith. Another thing that happened was that it was never said, or at least I don't remember that it was said, that, again, my dad wasn't much into the religion. He did go to church, but it was really mom, and I grew up in a matriarchal home. And it was the inference was that there was nothing I could do to make her prouder than to become a priest. So I was an altar boy, and I was the head altar boy, and when I was in eighth grade, I went to a retreat for a weekend to go to a seminary called Quigley Seminary, which would be a high school where you would study to become a priest. Now, I don't know why I didn't end up going there, but that's just part of the journey here that I'm trying to communicate. And then I went to a Catholic high school, and then I went to a Catholic college, and then I went to a Catholic graduate school. And I love to joke with people and say that, and it's true, the only people with more Catholic education than me, they call father. I have 18 years of Catholic education. So it was still, then I started in, I was teaching confirmation students, you know, preparing them for confirmation. Then I became a Eucharistic minister, which meant I could give communion out. I would take communion to the sick. And then I would, I became part of the team. It was called RCIA, which simply meant the Rite of Christian Initiation of Adults, which meant that these were the people who were studying to become Catholic. And it was fascinating because they were exploring, and Catholicism was where they were going to. And there were seven of us on the team, and I was on that for 6 or 7 years. And every year we'd ask the students what the traits of God were. And we'd list it on the board. And then every year we'd say, reduce it to one. And every year it was reduced to unconditional love. So it was in that, and I don't remember which year. We're talking about approximately 1988 now. And sister who was in charge of the thing, I think her name was Sister Miriam, the 1 year, and I sit there because each one of us has a certain role to play, and I'm listening to her, and she said, this is the part where it's a question that changed my life. She said, well, what was God like when you were a kid? I said, what do you mean, what was he like when I was a kid? You, the church, told me what he was like. He was an old man. He had white hair. He had a beard, and in my opinion, he was an accountant, and he had this long ledger. And if when I died, he'd say, sit down, Jim, you were one bad dude. And he'd have a whole list of everything I ever did wrong. And so I didn't understand why she was asking that, because I still believed you do what the Catholic Church tells you to do. They tell you what God is like, and that's it. So then, the next question, which is the life-changing question, was, what is God like now? And that blew my mind. It blew my mind. I said, what do you mean, what's God like now? You told me what God was like. So I came home and I thought about it and I said, okay, they taught me about two kinds of God. One was a conditionally loving God and the other was an unconditionally loving God. Which one do I want to believe in? And instantly, I chose to believe in an unconditionally loving God. So the next question that came to me was, well, okay, if I were God, and if I could love unconditionally, what would that mean? And the answer was, I would love without condition. You know, I mean, some of you may be thinking, well, this is pretty simple. And yeah, I'm pretty simple, and I pride myself on being simple. So the next question was, well, what would that mean? And the answer that came to me was, there was nothing any of my children could ever say or ever do that would ever change my love for them. And the next question that came to me, or the final question, was, well, what does that mean? And the answer that came to me, for me, was, there's no such thing as sin or hell. And that basically ended my relationship with the Catholic Church and ultimately with religion, period. And it ended it, and there was no anger, there was no resentment. Like, you know, I bought this stuff for 44 years. It's okay, that was my journey. And I grew out of it, and now it's time to go on to the next phase of my life, which I did. And I've been on since 1988 or thereabouts, so we're, you know, what are we talking about? 28 years, something like that? I don't know. So what I wanted to do now is to spend the rest of the time sharing with you some of the things I've learned along the way on this journey. And I don't, you know, the word learn probably isn't the right word. I'd say the right word is the things I'm learning, because there's a lot of things I think I've learned and I get tripped up. So I think that this is a matter for me of consciousness, and the consciousness is an awareness, and it's a bringing it up and saying, oh, okay, oops, forgot again, oops, and not beating myself up when I forget. And all of that's okay. So now, I have a list here of about 60-some odd things. So I'm guessing in the next 45 minutes or so, I may not get through it all. But we'll just play with it and see. Let me just check here on the chat room, see if anybody's there. No. For all I know, I may be talking to myself. Oh, well, we know how that goes. I just saw a joke the other day. It said, the little boy says to his dad, he says, Dad, is it true that when you were a kid that you were smarter than your phone? Okay, so the first thing I'm learning is to love myself just the way I am. Okay, I make mistakes every single day. I can't get from home to the gym without making some criticism or some judgment about the way somebody is driving. And I'm trying to just, you know, go along just watching them and seeing, hey, every one of us has our own agenda. We have our own things that are going on in our life. We have our own priorities. And it's amazing that 7.2 billion of us survive together on this planet with 7.2 billion different agendas, different backgrounds, different lifestyles, different cultures, etc. At any rate, that's the number one thing to me. And then the second thing is learning to trust my intuition. And we'll go into that, or I'll go into it. But, you know, I think we get caught up in our our words. Now, whether I call it my intuition, my inner knowing, my higher self, my ability to discern, I don't know that any of it makes any difference. It's that I have something within me that's other than my ego. And I define my ego down here somewhere as you know, my ego is that part of me that's about disharmony. And it's all, you know, when things are, you know, it's like stirring up the pot. So I'm learning to trust that intuition, to stop and go, okay, well, what makes sense here? What I have is a truth meter. And I believe every one of us has a truth meter. And I have to keep that thing on and say, well, does this make any sense? Does this work for me? Hey, it may work for you, and that's fine. Doesn't mean that we have to agree on anything to be able to get along with each other. I got a truth meter on, and that resonates with me. Or, no, that doesn't resonate with me. I mean, all you have to do is look at the political arena and see all the people that are out there wanting to be president. And the thing I always find humorous about them is every one of them is going to fix the country and fix the world, and then when he or she doesn't get elected, we never see him anymore. But anyway, I digress. I also have finally gotten to the place where I see life as a journey. And there's nowhere to get, unless you want to say, well, you know, getting to death. It's a journey, and we're on this journey of exploration, of learning, of expanding, of growing, of playing, of helping each other, of having experiences. It's just an amazing journey, and it can be as broad or narrow as I want it to be. And always saying, hey, there's another way to look at this. And one of my favorite sayings, and I don't have it on my computer right now, but I used to have it taped to my computer, and that was, this too shall pass, no matter what we're talking about. Or, I've said this in prior shows, my favorite quote is from A Course in Miracles. And the quote is, what could you not accept if you but knew everything that happens to you, past, present, and to come, is gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good? And what that means to me is, what couldn't you accept if you knew everything is a gift from God? Which leads us to only ask one question. Hey, God, how's this a gift? Because I trust you, I will accept that everything you give me or put in front of me is a gift. And my job is to look and see and find out how it's a gift. Which leads me to only ask that question over and over and over again. Hey, God, how is this a gift? And the only place I can find the answer to, hey, God, how is this a gift, is in my heart. I'll never find it in my head because my ego's going to jumble everything up and say, it's not a gift. You know, why would he give you a gift? Why would he care about you? Why wouldn't he, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot more people, and he's got a lot more things on, you know, on his mind, and blah, blah, blah. And there was another thing about how I grew up, is that they taught me that God was a man. And yet I've never seen another species where we only have a man. And the first time our youngest son, Matt, said to him God was energy, it threatened. I felt threatened. I went, oh, no, I mean, God's a man. And now I look at it, and I don't know what this concept of God is. I have the belief now that it's a consciousness, it's an awareness, it's a being, a level higher than we can even imagine. I don't know if you've seen recently where they're saying that we now have another planet. They haven't named it yet. And you look at all these universes that there are and how they, you know, how all this comes together. There's some being out there or in here that has created this and or is keeping it going. And again, that's my point of view. And the last thing I wrote down for this program is that my mind is like a parachute, and it works best when it's open. And I have to be vigilant to make sure that I keep my mind open. Because sometimes it's easy to say, oh, no, this is the way it is, because this is the way I believe. So if I believe it, you know, and I've done all this work to get to the point of believing whatever it is I believe, it must be right. That, again, I think is our ego. Who cares if we're right? We're here on a journey. We're here to explore ourselves. We're here to learn about ourselves. We're here to love ourselves. We're here to forgive ourselves. We're here to heal ourselves and each other from the pain we've had. We're here to love. I mean, love is messy. All of us know love is messy. And some people, when they get their heart broken, they're so terrified by it, they won't let anybody in. And I've always believed that it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. And you can say, well, that's easy for you to say, Jim. You know, you've been married for almost 49 years, which is true. So I have one love. And which reminds me, a friend of mine, Barbara Ann's husband, passed away New Year's Eve. And I asked Matt's second mom, Nancy Schaefer, if she would, she lost her husband 3 years ago, if she would talk to Barbara Ann. And she said, sure. She said, I love my husband. I'm still married to him. That's the nicest thing I think I've ever heard said in my whole life. That she's still married to him, and he left his body 3 years ago. And she still loves him. So the other thing that I tell everybody, and I try to tell to everybody, one is everything I tell you is my point of view. Okay, I don't know, in quotations, anything. It's all this stuff is just my point of view. And the second thing I tell everybody is to be true to yourself, which means that I have to be true to myself. And I think I'm going to sneeze in a second. So we may, I'll have to move my microphone off of my head. It's coming. Hold on a sec. I think I lied. So the next thing, and this one has been a bear for me to learn, and that is that all the answers are inside of me. And the reason it's been a bear is, well, hey, Shannon, how do I do this? Hey, Charlene, what about this? Hey, Karen, what about this? Hey, Jeff, what about this? And, you know, what I learned is by asking other people how they would handle something, they would tell me how they would handle it. Even if you didn't say, what would you do? They're going to tell you how they would do it. And what's the problem with that? Well, that's them. That's not me. And I'm not them, and they're not me. So what works for them isn't going to work for me, number one. And number two, what I'm doing when I'm doing that is I'm giving away my power. I have to trust myself. And if I trust myself, then whatever the problem or questions are, they're inside of me. The answers are inside of me. I can do that. I know that. So the next thing I have here is that there's a whole world of consciousness outside of my five senses. And what was I taught? I was taught that everything is within confines of the five senses. In other words, intuition, mediumship, unconditional love, things I can't see or hear, they don't exist. And we know that that's absolutely stupid, because we know that dogs can hear sounds we can't hear. We know that microwaves are something that we can't see. We know that there's colors beyond what the eyes can see in terms of a rainbow or a spectrum. So we know all these things, and yet we buy into this, indoctrination, that all that exists is that which we can grasp through the use of our five senses. And the problem with that is I can never expand my consciousness if I believe that. When I meditate every day, I think, well, I'm not meditating. And then a phone will ring, and I'll jump what seems to be like a foot. So I'm deeper into this meditation than I tend to think I am. So we have this tendency to criticize ourselves, and how many of us, you know, have heard this saying that, you know, I'm my own worst enemy, and we got to let that go. So my job is to try and tap into this consciousness and to raise my level of consciousness. And I'm gonna reach out here, and if you don't believe this, that's fine. But I've read two books about the Acturians. It's Acturians, and they're a group of beings from the planet Acturius, and they function on the fifth level, which is unconditional love, and they're guardian. They're being a guardian to us to help us raise our level of consciousness so that we can get to the place of unconditional love. They used to be in conditional love, and now, from what I read, they live for about 400 years. They don't have to eat. They communicate through telepathy. And again, there's no competition, and everything is about unconditional love, which is something that just is almost beyond my ability to comprehend. And I know, like, and again, I'm not saying any other man is like this. I know that for me, my love, well, let's see, the three people, you know, in my inner circle are my wife, Rosemary, and our sons, Mike and Matt. And I have a tendency to be more conditional in my love and let my ego get in the way. Well, she said this or she did that. Or, you know, my wife is a master electrician. You know, she's got my buttons wired, and I just go, and if I say something about one of our sons, oh, no. I mean, she'll automatically take their side. And I think a mom's love is closer to unconditional. Well, let me put it another way. Rosemary's love of our sons is more unconditional than mine is of our sons. So it's a journey. It's a journey for me of learning to let that stuff go, of confronting my ego and saying, hey, wait a minute, this is silly. You know, you don't say, if you do this, then I'll love you. If you say that, then I'll love you. If you don't do this, I won't. You know, and I just get, it ends up creating a lot of inner angst for me, and it doesn't work. So I'm in this place where I'm trying to let go of it. Now, what I also know is that my thoughts create. And I accept that. Again, what one of my premises is to help people never, ever play the role of victim, but always to take back your power. So in that regard, then accept the thing that your thoughts create. And what you do is you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, but my life is a mess, and I wouldn't do that. And every one of us knows that we sabotage ourselves if we're being truthful about it. So, yeah, we create, and let's accept that we can create, and we can create something now that we know how to create that's much greater as a conscious creator than anything we could ever imagine as an unconscious creator. So I mentioned earlier that, you know, God to me is a consciousness. It's an energy, you know, etc. And here's the biggie for me. And again, if you want to believe in it, that's fine. I'm not here as to convert anybody. Every one of us, I don't think there's any right way or any wrong way. And that's one of the troubles with religion. They'll say, oh, unless you belong to my religion, you're going to go to hell. And that brings me to the biggie. And that is, there is no hell. And I told you, Mom went to Mass and Communion 7 days a week until she was 85. And I said to her, Mom, there is no hell. I said, and when you die, I want you to come back to me, and I want you to tell me I was right. And she says, well, what if you die first? I said, Mom, you don't believe me when I'm alive. You tell me if I died first that you would go to a medium who would bring me in, and the medium would say, yeah, Jim was right, there is no hell. And incidentally, read The Afterlife of Billy Fingers by Annie Kagan. It talks about his afterlife, and he was a drug addict. And it's fabulous. And you say, well, is it true? I don't know. I don't know if anything's true. I mean, the world believed that the world was flat at one time. Galileo got excommunicated because he was a heretic, and he said that the earth revolved around the sun. So what we know today and what we'll know in 100 or 1,000 years is totally different. So what is true for me today isn't what was true for me when I was 40. Totally different world, totally different life that I'm in. So to me, so anyway, when my mom passed away in 2009, I was using Karen Anderson as a medium, and I love mediums. I you know, people say, oh, they don't believe that, and there's crooked psychics or mediums or whatever they want to call them, and there's crooked everything. But if that person can tell you something that nobody but you and, let's say, your grandmother knew, wouldn't that validate that this person is able to communicate with beings after they've left their body? Anyway, I could go on about that, but I'm not going to. So when I got home after we went to Chicago for Mom's funeral and had a session with Karen, and she brought in my mom, and I said, well, Mom, was I right? And what Karen related as something that my mom was saying to me is, shame on me. I had to die my physical body to know my son was telling me the truth. And the sad thing is that she lived her life in the fear of going to hell. And when my Aunt Viv passed away and Karen brought her in, you know, she was very grateful because I taught her about that. And she said, otherwise, all I would have known was what I was taught by the Catholic Church. So that brings us to the next part, which would be the medium part. And that is that I'm finally convinced that I am my soul. And I know that when I get in my car, I'm not my car. I know when I come into our home, I'm not my home. And I now know that I am not my body. Who I am is my soul. When I get into my car, I get into my car. When I come home, I'm in my home. Right now, what I'm saying is I believe that I am a soul. And I am in a body. And the purpose of being in this body is to have experiences that I can have through the body. And the experiences are those that are created by the soul. And that's my point of view or my belief about that. Which would lead us to the next thing, and that would be about fear. And we live in a world that is run by fear. I mean, you look at it, and those of you who are listening to this in 2016, and you see Donald Trump is running for president of the United States, and he's classical in terms of stirring up fear. Oh, the Mexicans are no good. Oh, the Syrians are no good. Oh, Muslims are no good. Oh, be afraid of everybody. Be afraid of everybody. Be afraid of everybody. We've been to 107 countries, and I've never had one bad experience. And in the 1980s, I was working, and I was in South Central Los Angeles, and I was running out of gas. And it was considered one of the biggest crime area in the United States. And the car stops, and I get out to go and push it to the curb, and four black guys walk toward me, and they say, get back in the car. So I get in the car, and I said, okay, God, you're in charge of this one. They push the car to the curb. One of them says, come with me, I'll take you to the gas station while my three buddies watch your car. We walked down a street where his brother lived. His brother came, he had a pickup truck with a camper in the back. We got to the gas station, they had a gas can, I gave him the money for the gas, took me back to my car, prime the carburetor, pour the rest of the gas in my gas tank. I started the car, and they said, have a good day. So I don't believe in this fear anymore. I think there's this thing of discernment, and I think there's a thing about what I need, you know, need to get out of here now. But fear is an illusion. And when I speak on cruise ships, or when we go on a cruise and we go see the magicians, you know, when I've seen David Copperfield on television, I know he didn't make an elephant disappear. I watch these magicians, and I know that, you know, this is an illusion. And as a matter of fact, they don't even call them magicians anymore. They call them illusionists. So I want you to consider just accepting that fear is an illusion. It isn't real unless you believe it's real. If you believe that guy made the elephant disappear, then to you, he made the elephant disappear. That didn't mean he made it disappear. So fear is an illusion. Forgiveness is huge. And when I did the show a couple years ago, I think I did 4 or 5 programs on forgiveness. And I think forgiveness is something that we constantly have to do, because we're always condemning ourselves, criticizing ourselves, judging ourselves, and doing the same for other people. And for those of you who haven't listened to those other shows, I define forgiveness as releasing the emotional attachment to the event. And so often people think forgiveness is about condoning behavior. Forgiveness has nothing to do with behavior, and forgiveness is only for yourself. Now, we also have to, we have to surrender. And to me, surrender is like breathing. I have to constantly be surrendering. I can't just say, okay, I'm surrendered, I'm done, that's it, it's over, I've surrendered for the rest of my life. Like breathing. You can take a breath, and boy, you don't take another breath for a minute or two, and you're in deep trouble. Surrendering is the same thing. Constantly having to surrender. Now, the way I look at life now is that home is unconditional love. I came from home. Some of you may call it heaven. I don't care what it's called. And there, all there was unity. Unity is another word for unconditional love. I left my home of unconditional love to come into this world of duality, where everything is up, down, right, wrong, in, out, good, bad. And we have to say, okay, this is the world we live in. But I think it was Jesus that said, in this world, but not of this world. And sometimes, you know, I feel like I've landed here from another planet. I'm sure there's some of you out here who are listening to this and saying, well, I feel the same way. Pardon me. And again, the challenge is to be true to ourselves and not to be intimidated by other people saying, well, you have to say this or do this or look like this or look like that. And, you know, we got to let that go and be ourselves and allow ourselves the freedom to be who we are. Because the other thing I say or see is that I'm the only person God ever gave the gifts that he gave to me. And my point of view about that is he's saying to me, hey, Jim, would you share these gifts with other people? And what I try to do is to do that every day, everywhere I go. I mentioned we've been to over 100 countries, and I can't comprehend the concept of the world. So I reduce it to my world. And my world are the people I see and talk to every day, like talking to you right now. So what's my job? In my opinion, my job is to be a springtime farmer. And I plant these seeds. And then I go to the next field and plant seeds and plant seeds. I don't even know who you are. I don't know where you are in the world. I don't have any idea what impact any of this has on you. And 99.9% of the time, I never get any feedback. Every once in a while, and predominantly that's on cruise ships, I get feedback, which I love. And if you want to give me feedback, the email is jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. I see it says we're down to about 20 minutes. You know what is neat about this? I can always extend this. and they told me about it, and I've done it before, but I don't know, I don't remember how to do it right now. But anyhow, another thing I'm learning to do is to accept things without understanding them. And one day I was talking to God, and I said, "Hey God, I don't understand this." And I talked to him like I talked to you. And the answer I got, and I don't know where I get the answer. I don't know if I get the head in my head. I don't hear words like I hear myself speaking now. I don't hear those. But the answer I got was, understanding is way overrated. And my mom always used to say when I was a kid, "Honey, someday you'll understand." And I believe with all my heart that God's mantra is that. Honey, someday you'll understand. So my challenge constantly is to accept things without having to understand them. My ego is that part of me that is about disharmony. And I'm constantly trying to check that voice and seek to hear and listen to the voice of peace and of love. And I've heard that for years, but I'm finally getting it, that, you know, this agita, this constant stirring up is something that doesn't need to be. And it's like Rosemary retires, I'm thinking, well, do we have enough money for this, for that, to stay here, stay there? And I'm trying to say, well, we got to do this and do that. And that's a control thing, and that's an ego thing. And I got to surrender that and say, oh, okay. Let's let it be. Let's play it by ear. You know, like the way I like to put it is, if we're walking down a river and there's a bridge a mile down the river, when can we cross the bridge? We can only cross the bridge when we get to it. So, you know, in other words, deal with the problem. And when we're talking about peace, I like to use the example of a hurricane. And in the eye of the hurricane is where there's total peace. And that's the only place you want to live, is in the eye of the hurricane. And when you feel things are starting to pull you, that's the sign that's saying, hey, you're moving out of the eye of the hurricane. You got to get back into that place of complete silence, of complete peace. Another thing I've learned that's huge for me is that I'm never alone. God's always with me. And I've used footprints as a closing for years, and I'll just share it with you now. And the way I do it when I'm on stage is I don't look at you, the audience. I just stand there as if I'm one person talking to God. And then I turn around and stand there as if I'm God talking to me. And so footprints is a story about a man who is looking at all the scenes of his life. He's on the seashore. And he sees all the scenes of his life, and he sees there's two sets of footprints in every scene of his life. And then he sees the last set of footprints, the last scene of his life, and he notices there's only one set of footprints. Then he looks back, and he sees there's a whole bunch of times in his life where there's only one set of footprints, and he notices those are always when things were hard. And he says, hey, God, you promised me if I followed you, you'd take care of me. And I see all these times in my life when there was, you know, it was really hard. There's only one set of footprints. Did you abandon me? And then I stop, and I turn around as if I'm God, and I hold, like, you know, I was holding his or her face with my hands. And I say, no, honey, that's when I was carrying you. And then I stop. And I turn to the audience, and you're the audience now. So if you can do this, because you're not driving, or you're not, you know, someplace where you can close your eyes, you don't have to do it now. Close your eyes, climb up on God's back, arms around his chest, wrap your legs around his waist, and know that no matter what happens, he will carry you through this. Sometimes we're human beings and we need to see this and to feel this and to get to know this. You are never alone. I am never alone. We will never, ever be abandoned. And that's part of my ability or desire to trust myself, to trust the process of life, to trust my God, and to accept that everything is for my highest good. Okay, now, I don't know how many of you remember Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. I saw him recently. Oprah had him on Super Soul Sunday. And the first one, which makes the most sense to me, is not to take things personally. And I really work to do that and not take something personally. Because all people are doing is reflecting their insecurities to you. And people, you know, we don't know how to. My friend who lost her husband said somebody called her and said, "Are you better yet?" And you're going, "Really? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since she lost her husband after over 50 years of marriage. And someone would say to you, are you better yet?" So we do things without thinking. And how many of us have done that? And those words are out there and you're trying to say, oh my God, could I get those back? And we can't. Now, one of the things, Shannon, who's in England, and she does these collages, which I just love. And somehow she does reading, and she goes through each one of the chakras. And then she has a message from Spirit. And the message, I just got this 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the message from Spirit for this year is they'll continue to send me people who are lost and scared for me to help them. And for each one of us, we have a different mission. We have a different purpose. We're all unique. We're all one of a kind. And that one is another one that's been hard for me to get. And that is because, you know, I'm a man, you're a woman, I'm this age, you're that age, speak this language, et cetera, et cetera. And so the only way I can communicate that we're all one, is think of yourself as a cell in the liver. And I'm a cell in the eye. And I'm trying to tell you how beautiful the world is, how beautiful a sunrise is, how beautiful a rainbow is, how beautiful a new baby is. All these amazing things. And where are you? You're in the liver, and you're processing toxins so that the body doesn't die if you don't process these toxins. And it's virtually impossible for you to comprehend the idea that we're one. And we're all one. And hold your hand up right now if you can. And hold with your palm facing you. And try and move your baby finger without your ring finger moving. And that's, you see the tip of your finger moving? That's another way for you to look and say, you see how we're all connected? One finger is connected to the other finger. We're all connected. So we got to stop hating each other, stop divorcing, stop killing, stop doing all that and say, hey, we're all one. We got to learn how to live together and how to solve our problems when killing each other is not an option. I don't know how many years ago it was that I wrote in my journal, which I've kept for, I want to say, between 25 and 30 years, and I got about 2,000 pages of journaling. And that was that I am an ambassador for God. And every time I speak on a cruise ship, I know somebody's life is going to be changed. And I'm not doing it. But I get to let God use me to deliver these messages and have had amazing miracles happen. And that's what each one of us can do. Each one of us, I believe, is an ambassador for God. Every show I tell you, and obviously I learned this when I first started speaking, and I was afraid that somebody in the audience would ask me a question and I wouldn't know the answer until I ran across Terry Cole Whitaker's book that said, "What you think of me is none of my business." And it gave me permission to be myself, to love myself the way I am. I'm going to have to move quicker here. I'm halfway through my list. We're all eternal. I've learned that. We're always going to be learning. Doesn't matter where we are, how much we know. We can't even comprehend how much there is to learn. Listen to this one. Nobody has ever died from an overdose of love. So give your love away. Don't have any strings attached to it. Just give your love away. Another thing that I do, I play with people everywhere in the world. Everywhere. And almost everybody plays back with me. So play. Have fun with people. They'll play back with you. Trust me, no matter where I am. In the grocery store, I told the lady how beautiful her hair looked, and she just was awestruck and said, "Such a nice compliment." And I told her, went on and on and on. Make people feel better about themselves. It's very easy. And I also try to attempt to bring joy into everybody's life. I mean, when I'm in a grocery store and somebody's got a little baby in a cart, and I say, "Wait, where'd you get that baby? Is that the last one?" Or I say to the little kid, I said, "Do you take beautiful pills? How did you get so beautiful so fast?" Needless to say, I believe in miracles. And I don't know who said it, but it was something like, you believe that either everything is a miracle or nothing is a miracle. You get to choose. I know I'm going fast here, and I apologize for that. I'm looking at some of these things that I have written down that I already talked about. I didn't have to go in order. Ha, 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 ha. I overcame my left brain. It says, you got to go in the order you wrote them down. No, I don't. We're here to take care of each other. We're here to help each other heal from our wounds of the past. Every one of us has had a broken heart. And it's always better to have loved and lost than never have loved at all. I don't care what happened to you. Love, 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 love. Give, 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 give. Give without expectations of how it's going to be received or how it's going to be returned. Just give your love away. There's an infinite supply of love. There's an infinite variety of ways to do things, too. And in other words, I'm saying, hey, there's no right way, there's no wrong way, or there's you got to do it my way. No, we don't. Life is all about relationship. First with myself, then with my creator, and then with others. I'm gonna jump ahead, and I'm gonna bring this to a close because I see I have 6 minutes and. What I want to wind up with, and there's about 15 or 20 things I haven't covered, is what I tell a mom and dad when I see them with a little baby of about the age 1 to 3 or 4. And I'll say, here's the 4 gifts that that baby has given you. That baby loves you unconditionally. That baby forgives and forgets. That baby has no concept of failure. And everything the baby does is an adventure. So my question to you then is, what would your life be like if you could love unconditionally, if you could forgive and forget, if you have no concept of failure, and no matter what you're doing, it's an adventure? That's my gift to you, that you can love unconditionally, that you can forgive and forget, that you can let go of all concept of failure, and that you can see everything you do as an adventure. So, let me bring this to a close. And a quote from Wayne Dyer is, "Everything you are against weakens you, and everything that you are for empowers you." Closing story is about This was happening in 2007. A man playing a violin in the metro station in D.C. He played 6 Bach pieces for about 45 minutes. And during that time, about 2,000 people went through the station, most of them on their way to work. In the beginning, a middle-aged man noticed there was a musician played. He slowed and stopped for a few seconds and hurried on his schedule. Then, about a few minutes later, he received his first dollar. A woman threw money in the hat and, without stopping, continued to walk. 5 minutes later, a young man leaned against the wall to listen to him, then looked at his watch and started to walk again. 10 minutes later, a 3-year-old stopped, but his mother tugged him along, and all the other kids, the mother pulled him along. About 45 minutes, he played continuously. Only 6 people stopped and listened for a short while. 20 of them gave money for a total of $32. When he finished playing and silence took over, nobody noticed and nobody applauded. No recognition at all. Nobody knew this, but the violinist was Joshua Bell, one of the greatest musicians in the world. He played one of the most intricate pieces ever written with a violin worth $3.5 million. 2 days earlier, he sold out a theater in Boston where they paid $100 each to sit and listen to the same music. So he was playing incognito in a D.C. station organized by the Washington Post as part of a social experiment about perception and people's priorities. So here's the questions that were raised. In a commonplace environment at an inappropriate hour, do we perceive beauty? If so, do we appreciate it? Do we recognize talent in an unexpected context? One possible conclusion reached from this experiment could be, if we do not have a moment to stop and listen to one of the best musicians in the world playing the finest piece of music ever written, one of them, with one of the most beautiful instruments ever made, how many other things are we missing and rushing through our life? Next week's show is going to be providing you with the tools to get you through this journey called life. And I ask you, as we bring this to a close, what's the most important thing that you got out of today's program? You might want to keep a list of these things and title it Keepers. Add other keepers to your list as they're given to you. And I ask you to share this program with your family and friends. I have a minute and a half so I can get to a couple things. Oh, love is messy. Be kind and compassionate. You never know what's going on with somebody else inside of them. I'm learning about compassion. It doesn't matter how many lives you touch, I touch. I'm not competing with anybody for anything. Each one of us, including myself, need to let go and to let God. We have to, and I'm learning to live more from my heart. I'm trying to learn to communicate more clearly. And everything, I believe this with all my heart, everything is perfectly, divinely choreographed. And I don't need to understand it. I went to conduct a board retreat 15 years ago, and this woman said, my dad was on my right shoulder and there were other things, but I got home and I said, hey, God, what's this all about? And the answer I heard was, I had to get you there. So now, everywhere I go, I say, okay, I'm here, and I think this is why I'm here, but let's see what God has for me. So I send my love from my heart to yours and ask you to receive it and share it because there's an infinite supply of love. Thank you. Talk to you next week. I love you. Bye-bye.